Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 63, Jacqueline Way Creates Ripple Effects. Here's a shout out to listeners in Tennessee, in particular, Chattanooga, Roan Mountain, Memphis, Murfreesboro, and Clarksville. And a shout out to listeners in Happy Valley, Oregon. With that, let's get started. Imagine if you would, if you and all the listeners did an act of giving once a day for 365 days, the number would be substantial. Jacqueline Way not only does this, but she inspires and educates others to do the same. She expresses this through her charitable organization called 365 Give and has educated countless numbers of people through her talks, speaking engagements, and her TEDx, which you can find in the show notes. Through the stories that you're about to hear, Jacqueline explains what she does and why she does it. Part 1, It's in Our DNA. In episode 8, Ronald Graves talks about what coaching is, and he describes it in an unusual way. Think about the person being coached as being inside a box with a limited perspective. The coach, on the other hand, is outside the box and can see in the box and has a different perspective, can see things that the person who's being coached cannot see. Because of that, the coach may be able to know what you really need in a way that you can't see for yourself. In this story, Jacqueline touches on this concept, but it doesn't start with the concept itself. It starts with a story that takes place with retail. Here's Jacqueline.
You know, I've had many opportunities to work with some pretty brilliant people in our world. And I think one of the things that affected me most, because he was such a great leader and influence and mentor in my life, it was a gentleman by the name of Harry Rosen. And Harry Rosen happens to be a gentleman that is internationally known because he owns a retail chain of stores under his own name called Harry Rosen. And very expensive, very elite menswear store. And I happen to be in my 20s, the only woman at the time managing one of his stores in a world surrounded by men. I always felt like I was the lone sheep in a pack of wolves at times. I had the opportunity to be mentored by Harry, and there was this really brilliant moment when I was learning, of all things and skills in life, learning to measure a man to make a custom-made suit. And it's very far off to where I am today, but he taught me something about leadership and service and helping to not only create a wonderful experience from a customer service point of view, but how to make another person feel their best about themselves. And it was a lesson that I took with me for a long time, because Harry, in front of 40 other senior management team and men, asked me to measure him for a suit, which was a very intimidating process to do since he was the master at this trade. And when I measured him up for his suit, I wrote everything down and I spit all the measurements back at him. And he said, "You're wrong." And I said, no, I'm actually right." He said, "No, I don't wear my pants that size." And I said, "Well, Harry, you know, the funny thing is that you should be wearing your pants these size, because they would actually look better on you. And the one lesson that you gave me is make sure that you're making your customer look and feel their best. And so I'm giving you the advice that you are not looking, nor will you feel your best in the pants that you're wearing today."
I love it. That is...
It was a remarkable story that's always stayed with me, because just when people think something is the best for them, when we can stand back and look at them differently and guide them to what could be their best selves, it was the lesson that I've always taken with me and do my best in my own life to help people come to that place for themselves.
It's interesting in servant leadership, that whole concept. I usually don't talk about servant leadership because it's just, I try to unlabel all this stuff. In this book, The Servant, James Hunter talks about wants versus needs and how people want certain things, but it may not be what they need. Being able to help people with achieving what they need versus what they want is something that your story reminded me of.
Well, when we, you know, I know the term servant leadership is a little catchphrase at the moment. The way that I always look at it is when we come from a place of being of service to the world in everything that we do, and if that's of service to our families, to the service of our employees as a leader, this then makes us our best, because service actually ignites in us our happy chemicals in our body and our brains. It helps us become creative. It helps us calm our nervous systems. It reduces our stress and actually helps us perform at our best. So when people talk to me about leadership, I always say, when you come from a place of service in everything you do, you will actually be at your best, because it's how our bodies and our brains are actually wired.
If I was having a bad day, feeling down or whatever, you know, just being human or whatever, if I want to get energized and be at my best, it's when I deliberately try to find ways to helping other people excel, grow, and develop, and through volunteer efforts or whatever. And it just suddenly changes everything about my whole perception when I'm able to do something like that.
I'm a bit of a neuroscience nerd when it comes to exactly this and the positive effects of giving back and being of service in our life. And when we come from that place, I always say it's built in every human's DNA to actually come from a place of service. And it's the chemical reaction in our bodies that makes us feel love and feel happiness. It makes us feel alive. And you know that when you feel it, that you're doing exactly what you're here to do.
Part 2, 3 Degrees of Separation. People learn leadership in different ways, whether it's formal training, coaching, reading a book, or watching a video, taking a course. But one way in particular, and maybe a very popular way, is modeling. In other words, observing how other people lead. Throughout our lives, we pick up habits that way. Jacqueline shares a story in which she explains how she learned some leadership that someone taught her indirectly. Here's Jacqueline to explain.
Well, you know, I always like sharing other people's stories rather than my own, because that's our learning in our life that always leads us to the place we need to be. I think I always like to share the story of my father. He now knows the effect that he has had on me and the direction that I've taken in my life. But, you know, my father was like many people's parents. He was off the boat, British, had a very difficult upbringing, lived through the war. He was that kid that had to run down into the tunnels during World War II to try and stay safe so that he didn't get bombed. He came to Canada, and his main mission in life, he became a doctor because he wanted to be of service to other people and do his best to help others. As much as he was very army type, very hardcore, very British, you know, the words "I love you" did not roll off of his tongue easily by any means. When I was able to step back in my life and when I had my own children, I realized that his leadership taught me what I really needed to learn in my life. And that was the same thing that we just talked about. And that's of being of service to other people. And he taught us this not intentionally, but indirectly. He always, always made sure that when there were times in his patient's life that they needed to be uplifted and needed some happiness in the lives of the patients that he touched, which were many were terminally ill people, he would bring us to the hospital. The story that I shared in my TED talk was when every single Christmas morning, you know, he brought us to the hospital and we would sing Christmas carols to his patients around the bed. At the time, you know, as a 9, 10, 11-year-old child, I thought it was personal torture to be forced to do this, you know, wear the matching Christmas sweaters, and my sister would play her guitar and off we would go and sing to these very ill patients of his. But what it did is it planted that seed of service in me, which grew and set me on that track for my lifetime. Because what I learned is how happy I can make another person by doing something so small and so simple to me, which was singing a song. I could contribute to the well-being of another person. He did this in many different ways throughout his life and continually made us be of service. And at the time, it was making us in a little bit in a roundabout way. There's probably lots of other things I'd like to have been doing, like riding my bike with my friends or going tobogganing. But he always put service first in our lives. That led me and all of my sisters to lead a life of service through the work that we do. And it was his contribution and leadership in that respect that carried on a legacy that I'm not sure he really realizes he contributed to in a big way. It's something that I've continued and I continue to do with my children and will through their lifetime as well, because I truly believe that the contribution of each individual on our planet creates a better, happier world for us all. And it doesn't just have to be the millionaires and the billionaires that go and, you know, try and literally eradicate hunger in our world, but it's the contribution that we can each make in our own lives that continues the ripple throughout the whole world. His leadership for me, without him ever knowing it, has changed not only my life and my children's life, but the millions of people that we've been able to touch as well.
You mentioned that you were taught this indirectly. I imagine that he modeled that behavior so well that you could not help but pick it up over time.
Completely and totally. Yep, absolutely.
I mentioned this person before on a previous podcast, Roger Kaufman, who's passed away last year. He was a human performance consultant, expert, professor. His whole mission in life was about bettering society. And he often talked about, regardless of your role, what you're doing, think about every act that you're doing as either contributing towards society or not. And you know, you mentioned the rippling effect. He sincerely believed that some small acts can have this type of an effect. And the way your father influenced you and modeled this behavior for you, and you've been able to talk about this on this podcast, on other podcasts and talks, his modeling has a like you said, affected so many people through you and through the other people who we influenced.
Well, you know, science and research now actually can tell us, because researchers have studied this phenomenon of the ripple effect of giving, philanthropy, altruism, whichever you would like to call it. And they can now actually measure it to what they call 3 degrees of separation. So every time you do a random act of kindness, an act of giving, it will affect 3 people. Within that circle, not only the person that you've touched, but they will then in turn around and touch people. And the other really neat thing that most people don't realize is we have these things called mirror neurons in our brains. So even if somebody witnesses, let's say I'm picking up garbage down at the beach, which I do on a regular basis. That's something my father used to do and I have picked up along the way. So if somebody will actually witness me picking up garbage along the beach, that will stimulate the same things in their brain that I'm feeling. So I'm feeling happy and good about my contribution that I'm making to the world. And because of the mirror neurons in our brain, they don't know the difference between actually the act of doing it and us witnessing an act of doing it. And so it will create the feelings of happiness and calm. It's actually creating for myself, even when you witness someone else doing it. And in turn, we'll more likely get someone to turn around and do the same thing or something similar very shortly after they've witnessed you doing it.
That is an interesting concept. It kind of related in my mind, and I come from the learning field, talent development, that kind of stuff. It reminded me of vicarious learning, where you observe someone doing something and you see the results for their action and you learn from that. And likewise, the empathy that can go with it. So if someone touched a burner and burnt herself, you can empathize that pain and almost feel that pain. But that it kind of reminded me of that.
You can look at it both ways. You watch a romantic comedy with a happy ending on TV. You get that warm, fuzzy feeling of just love and happiness at the end because there was a happy ending. The same way, you weren't in the movie. You didn't actually experience the romantic twist at the end or the happy ending at the end, but you can feel the same way or the feeling that they've created. The same way when you watch a scary movie, you will feel the same way. You will get terrified watching a scary movie, the reason I don't watch scary movies, and feel the exact same way.
Part 3, ROI of Happiness. There are a lot of studies that talk about the return on investment for building a strong culture, having a strong team. What Jacqueline shares is more fundamental and more foundational. It's about happiness. Here's Jacqueline to explain.
One of the things that people don't realize as leaders, and we're talking to business leaders in most aspects of this conversation, and I think one of the most important parts that leaders need to know is the importance of the happiness of their people. one of the things that people don't realize about this is how it actually affects your bottom line for your business. And they have now been able to measure, and I call it the ROI of happiness. So the return on investment of taking the time to make sure that your people are happy at their job, they're at work, and in their personal lives as well. Because they have now been able to measure that the return on investment of the happiness of your people is up to 22% on your bottom line. The reason that this is so effective is because some of the major problems that we have in the world today is the effect of stress on people's bodies. So when people are in high levels of stress and they're not happy at work, this affects everything from your healthcare costs. It affects your turnover ratio of your employees at work. It costs you money every time they're calling in sick or on stress leave. So all of these affect the bottom line of your company. It also affects the way that your employees are interacting with your customers. If your employees are coming from a happy, well-balanced place in their life, they are your best cheerleaders for your brand. That is also the ripple effect that we were talking about. When your employees are happy, this ripples to your customers as well. So your happy employees will be engaging and increasing the happiness of your customers, which in turn actually brings your customers back and back to your company and to your business and your brand, buying your products or services that you're selling. So if there's one thing that I can stress to leaders is when leaders learn, and it's not just going and putting this out to your employees, but leaders need to learn the importance of happiness and well-being for yourself so that you can lead with your employees and help them all come to that same place of happiness and well-being in their own lives. And in turn, this will be the best investment that you've ever made for your business.
In a lot of large American corporations, the higher up you move in the organization, the farther removed you become from not only the customers, but the employees. There's a challenge when someone is at the C-suite, when they start thinking of people as a spreadsheet number. What would you advise someone at the C-suite to do to reconnect or stay connected with their employees and what they can do to help them with minimizing stress or generating some happiness?
Absolutely. Well, I think two things I always recommend is one is, first of all, everyone needs to get educated on what this term well-being means, how it affects your life, how it affects not only your life, but your family's lives, and ripples through all areas. So that's the first thing, is education for your employees and for yourself on what that term well-being actually means and how it affects you both physically and mentally. We know that during COVID, the mental health of people has been so affected because we're no longer socially connected. You know, the difference between being on Zoom calls with your employees and actually being in an office place with them is it gives people the opportunity to bond together, to have conversations about their family, both the successes and the things that are stressing them. And it gives them that ability to be socially connected. And social connection is one of the major pillars and probably one of the most important pillars of well-being and mental health for people. And the next thing that I recommend beyond just the teaching is finding those ways to bring your employees together. And one of the most rewarding things that you can do is to actually create what is called a CSR program. So a corporate social responsibility program in your companies where the employees are empowered to choose how your company is going to give together. Because another pillar of the well-being is, or another one of the important pillars of well-being is having and creating purpose and meaning in your life. Now, that can be through your work, but it's not all through your work. Purpose and meaning is that legacy that we leave far beyond what we do just at work and the actual task that we do. But when you can create a higher purpose for your employees by the work that you do, whether it's giving volunteer time, whether it's doing projects together, it's figuring out a regular meeting time and social connection time where you're doing something good for the world, that will increase the well-being of your employees and will make them more socially connected beyond just the tasks that they have to do at work. And it's one of the most important things that you can implement in the workplace that will bring everyone together for good in the world.
I had someone on the show some time ago who actually said that when the pandemic started, he had a 20-minute standing meeting daily. he would meet with his team. And during that 20 minutes, they would talk about anything but work, what's going on in the world, how it's affecting them, et cetera. And the feedback at the end of the year was that that experience saved them mm-hmm. during the pandemic. It made it so that they were able to get through what they were experiencing and stay whole, so to speak.
Well, you know, the other thing that I recommend to people as well is you take those periods of time, or whether it's once a week or once every 2 weeks. And when you actually start meetings, you all take a moment and you talk about something that you're grateful for. And it doesn't have to be something at work. It'd be something, anything in your day or your week that's going on, but something that you're grateful for. Because when you connect to gratitude in your life and celebrate those wins, no matter how small they are, that actually creates feelings of happiness for you that you can hold on to, and a place that you can always go to at any time when maybe things are not going so well in your day. And then you're bringing your teams in to celebrate those victories in your life and in your workspace together. And that, again, just ripples throughout the workplace in such a positive way that affects everybody around you.
I'm curious about something. The idea of doing this before a meeting. I've talked to people who said that when they take project management, you have a project meeting, something like that. If they just start and just go into the project and what's going on and trying to figure out what they need to be doing, the way it's described to me, there's a risk that people will lose perspective on what they're trying to do. And they may, in a sense, slip their moral compass, so to speak. But when they do something at the beginning, when they talk about gratitude, when they talk about something that is important to them, or if it's even just reminding everyone what the purpose of this project is, what they're trying to achieve, it seems to be a reset for that moral compass. It sounds like even what you're suggesting can also have that effect, but it has so much other benefits as well.
Well, it does. It's actually good for our health, which is the main one. Practicing gratitude reduces our stress instantly. So when people are very busy and they just launch into work projects without taking that moment to be in the present, and you and I were talking about this earlier in your new discovery of Tony Robbins, you know, that's what he always talks about, is how do you get present in your moment? So just instead of running forward with your day-to-day activities or running into the stress of potentially a meeting, when you take that moment to take a breath, to be grateful, and if it's even for the breath, it sets everybody up for success and it puts everybody exactly where they need to be, which is present with everyone in the room, to then move forward in a positive way that will actually create a different outcome for what you're trying to move towards. It's the biggest lesson that people still struggle with is how do you not be in your head and be in the present moment so that you can effectively work at your best with the people around you.
My thanks to Jacqueline Way. If you'd like to learn more about Jacqueline, go to the show notes. And if you have a comment or question, go to unlabeledleadership.com, click the message icon, and you can leave a voicemail message up to 1 minute. I'd like to thank those who contribute to the show. Your contributions help offset some of the production costs, which is a big deal because this is an all-volunteer service. Mostly, though, thank you for listening. Until next time, lead on.